This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by TurbulenceTraining.com. Boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat at TurbulenceTraining.com. Hey, FitCast listeners, it's Kevin here. I hope all of you out there in America had a great Thanksgiving and everyone else around the world just had a great weekend overall. For this week's edition of the FitCast, we don't have a main show, mostly because of the holiday weekend and everyone was rushing around, and I simply couldn't get a guest this week. So, what I'm going to do for you is I'm going to give you a sneak peek of the new FitCast Insider. I'm going to give you almost half of an interview with Mike Robertson that we did that will just knock your socks off. And this is the kind of stuff that we're going to be giving you on the FitCast Insider, which is actually launching tonight. So, without further ado, here's a little piece of the interview that I did with Mike Robertson. Also, you can check out more on Mike Robertson at robertsontrainingsystems.com, and always check out the fitcast.com for all your FitCast needs, as always. And also, we're going to be giving away some cool stuff in the next couple weeks. And also, the winner for the Metabolism Advantage book will be announced next week, too. We have a winner for that. So keep a lookout for that, and I hope to see you all next week on the FitCast. Hope you have a great week. And I also hope you're having a great week of training. As many of you know, I kind of had a slump the last couple weeks. Sometimes you just need to change it up. Sometimes you just need to take a break. So as someone who hasn't really taken a break from training in the last 4 years, I got to tell you that it might be worth it. And just taking that week off can really mean the difference in motivation. And also, they're not joking when they say your strength levels can really get a nice boost from just taking a week off of training. So just keep that in mind. And again, I hope to see you all next week on the FitCast. Don't forget to check out the fitcast.com for all your FitCast needs, as always. Check out the newsletter, subscribe through iTunes. And again, thank you all for listening. We love having your support. And again, we'll see you next week with some original FitCast content. Now, without further ado, here is the interview, or half of the interview, with Mike Robertson. I hope you enjoy it. And if you want to check out the FitCast Insider, you can go to the FitCastInsider.com, or just shoot me an email through the FitCast.com as well. We can hook you up. It's only $99 until December 1st. You only get a couple days left, so don't forget to check that out. Hello and welcome to this edition of the FitCast Insider. With me today is Mike Robertson. How you doing, Mike?
Doing well. Yourself?
I'm doing great, thanks. It's a huge pleasure to have you on the FitCast Insider. Could you tell us a little bit about what we're going to be talking about today?
Yeah, today we're going to be talking about an article that Mike Boyle has written a while back called The Joint-by-Joint Approach to Training, and just kind of how some of my products work as far as that goes, and how to make your training even more efficient and make your body more efficient using this kind of approach with regards to your training.
Sounds good. We should just jump right into it. We have a list of topics to go over. Do you just want to kick it off?
Sure. But I think before we get going, it would probably help to preface a little bit here.
Definitely.
Kind of what we're talking about. Basically, what Mike did a while back was wrote an article called The Joint-by-Joint Approach to Training. And what he's getting at there is that throughout the body, there are certain joints that are better suited for mobility and certain joints that are better suited for stability. And when we start to look at this effect, how it works up the kinetic chain and up the body, it can really make a huge impact as far as how we're going to train ourselves. So, you know, if we're going up the body, we can start with the ankle joint. And, for example, the ankle joint has a lot of degrees of freedom and movement. So, in that case, we need better joint mobility there. We need to be able to reproduce that mobility. Moving up, we have the knee joint, which, you know, if you've heard me talk about knees at all, or if you've watched the Magnificent Mobility DVD, you'll see that the knee joint isn't necessarily predisposed to having good mobility. So that, in fact, leads it to need more stability. We need to keep the knee joint healthy. Moving up, the hip joint is better suited for mobility. So for those of you that have seen Magnificent Mobility and how that works, if you don't have proper hip mobility, it can lead to quite a few issues, which we'll get into more in depth later. The lumbar spine, again, is a stability-based joint. So you can see as we're working our way up the kinetic chain, they alternate. Ankle needs mobility, knee needs stability. Ankle or the hip needs mobility, the lumbar spine needs stability, and so on and so forth. So that kind of gives you an idea of how our body's designed, and we'll get more into the actual specific joints here in a second, but that should give you an idea. When we start looking at our body like that, we see that maybe, you know, like the really explosive cable wood choppers, you know, if they're not done properly, are going to be more detrimental to our training and to our low back health than maybe they should be. Or if we're doing all these joint mobility exercises around our knee joint, we're working counterproductively. So hopefully as we get into this and look at the specific joints, you'll have a better idea of how to set up your own training and how to keep your body as healthy and efficient as possible moving forward.
So would you say that previous ways that people have been training or setting up their programs might be detrimental to their mobility and their stability?
Most definitely. A great example that I always like to use with people is golfers. If you've worked with a fair amount of golfers, or especially golfers as they age, a lot of them probably don't have the necessary mobility in two key areas, the hips and the thoracic spine. So what happens is your body has this general idea of how much mobility it should have. So what I consider that is gross mobility. So your body knows it should have 100% mobility. It should be able to swing the club, you know, X amount of degrees in your backswing, X amount of degrees when you're coming through, right?
Yes.
The problem is when we're starting to get our mobility from the wrong area, so let's say our hips are really locked up. Something happens, we're sitting for long periods of time, and then our golfer goes out and tries to play. Well, he doesn't have the hip mobility that he may need, and he may not even have the thoracic spine mobility that he needs. So his body still knows, okay, well, I'm only getting 90% here. I need to get to 100%. So it looks to areas above and below and tries to reproduce or just maintain that gross mobility. So in this case, our lumbar spine, we start getting excessive amounts of rotation and torque through our lumbar spine, and then we start to wonder, is it any big issue or any big revelation that all these golfers have low back pain? So I think you're starting to see a change in the trends as far as how people train, especially certain athletes, but the lumbar spine is a huge one, especially with golfers. So if we're getting our mobility from the wrong areas, it's going to predispose us to injury. So if you know this stuff, you're going to be able to set up better training programs, not just for yourself, but for your clients.
Sounds good.
But at this point, we should probably just work our way up the kinetic chain, so that way we kind of have a better idea of what people are looking for. So when we start off, you know, it's easiest to work from the ground up, and the ankle joint is where a lot of issues begin, whether you know it or not. I know you talked about spraining ankles quite a bit throughout your athletic history, and I'm much the same. I've sprained my ankles probably more than any person should in one lifetime. Between basketball and volleyball, which I played competitively for most of, you know, my life up until I was 22, 23 years old, I can't tell you how many times I've jumped up only to fall on somebody's foot and roll my ankle to the outside. Yeah. So I'm sure I have a boatload of scar tissue build up. Hopefully not now because of all the soft tissue work I do, but you know, when we start to lose ankle mobility, it can cause issues way up the kinetic chain. The first place we're going to see issues at is the knee joint. Okay? When we don't have good mobility at our ankle, again, the body looks above and below. In this case, the first place it looks above is our knee joint. But honestly, with the ankle, you can see it as far as, you know, issues in the hip, the lumbar spine. Basically, if our ankles aren't in good condition, from a mobility standpoint, it's going to affect our entire body. So when we're looking at mobility at the ankle joint, the things that I generally tell people to work on are, especially people that weight train a lot, sagittal plane mobility. I wrote an article a while back for T-Mag called 18 Tips for Bulletproof Knees. And again, these two mobility drills that are in there from Mike Boyle's Functional Strength Coach DVD set. But basically, it's two ankle mobilizations. It's closed chain, so your foot's in contact with the ground, but it's trying to improve the ability to get your knees over your toes. okay, or sagittal plane mobility. If you look at a lot of people with patellofemoral issues or just general knee pain, generally their ankle mobility is atrocious. I work with a lot of basketball players, and you know, a while back, high ankle sprains, nobody had heard of a high ankle sprain, but a high ankle sprain is basically due to a ton of ankle issues originally. So what do? We put either an active ankle on the ankle or we tape the ankle joint, and now all of a sudden we've got these high ankle sprains. So again, when we sacrifice mobility at a joint that needs it, another joint, in this case the knee, is going to take more of a beating. So what I generally tell people to do with regards to ankle mobility, first off, a ton of ankle mobility work. The test is basically the movement itself, and if they do very poorly at it, you work at it. Another great little tool is, as we talked about a while back, Bill Hartman did a great little piece on soft tissue methods, especially for like the plantar flexors and the peroneal, so like your calves, your soleus, your peroneal muscles. Those generally need a ton of soft tissue work, especially if you've ever sprained ankles or just the general amount of calf training that we do in a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people think of calf training as, you know, seated calf raises, standing calf raises, but in essence, every time we take a step, every time we run, every time we jump, we're functionally shortening our plantar flexors. And so a lot of times people need soft tissue work and stretching for the calves, and then a ton of strengthening and activation work for the tibialis anterior. So if you do the mobility work and you add in the soft tissue work and then you start doing some strengthening work, you start to regain balance around that ankle joint and your knees are going to be much, much healthier.
Do you recommend to your athletes to tape their ankles if they have a sprain and they have a game that week?
Yeah, it's kind of a double-edged sword, you know. The best thing that you can do is, you know, if they're going to play, I mean, they're an athlete. I remember being there. I remember spraining an ankle on a Saturday basketball game, grade 2 sprain, did all the right things, and I was ready to play on Friday. I didn't play that much, but, you know, I obviously had to do the tape. I had to get the stability because my body wasn't doing it. So in that case, what I would do is, you know, they're going to play, tape them up, but you've got to monitor what's going on there. You've got to monitor the changes that are happening. So if you can do all the things that I talked about as far as, you know, making sure the ankle mobility comes back quickly, and making sure that you're constantly addressing scar tissue breakdown and things of that nature, you know, they're going to play. They're athletes. I understand that. So the best thing you can do is get them in the game, do as much as you can to protect them in that situation, and then going forward, just be wary of what might happen and the changes that might occur, and do everything in your power to address them.
Yeah, it's funny that after reading this article, some things are starting to make more sense. Like, I did have a bunch of ankle injuries when I was in high school,
yep.
And then I started wearing straps on my knees because I started getting jumper's knee.
Sure.
So there you go.
Your body doesn't, especially because you lose the mobility, but you also have a tendency to lose some of your shock absorption ability.
Mm-hmm.
You just become more rigid through your ankles. And I can't tell you how many of my basketball guys right now I've got constantly working on ankle mobility, just trying to loosen things up, get it back so that, you know, they keep their knees healthy. It's funny that you think, you know, most people were so caught up in a knee issue must be a knee problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really the case. You know, generally the symptoms are one thing, but the cause of the symptoms is something totally different. So I think when more PTs, ATs, and the people that are working with these injuries start to understand the function of the body a little bit better, we're going to be a much more efficient rehab-based society.
Absolutely.
So moving up, you know, the kinetic chain, that kind of covers the ankle, the knee joint. If you just look at the basic function of the knee, I mean, anybody can tell you that the knee doesn't have a lot of freedom of movement, right? It's a hinged joint,
mm-hmm.
And when we think of a door on a hinge, we think open, shut. So really two basic movements that it can do. Now, granted, if the knees flex, you can get some internal and external rotation, but I would say that that's pretty minimal. So when we think about it, the knee joint isn't really built for a lot of mobility. So when we see some of these people with the joint mobility stuff doing all these crazy, like 30 drills to loosen up your knee joints, I don't know if that's really the best thing possible, you know. I think if we work above and below on the mobility and then we work to stabilize or strengthen around the knee joint, mm-hmm. we're going to be doing a lot better. I could talk for an hour and a half on this, and I did at the LA seminar about knee joints and how to keep them healthy. But as far as stability goes, the best things that you can do, it's really common sense, but, you know, work to strengthen the muscles around your knees. You know, a lot of people are just flat out weak, and a lot of these athletes that are going to these performance centers anymore, they might do all this speed work and, you know, all the smoke and mirrors, you know, med ball training, and it looks really great, but as far as improving their function or their strength, I don't know how realistic that is. You know, a lot of athletes nowadays are just flat out weak, mm-hmm. and I think Eric addressed that really well and really in depth in his off-season training manual. But you have to focus on, you know, multiple areas. Most trainees, first off, as we all know, are really weak in their posterior chain. Their glutes, especially in the case of athletes, their glutes and their hamstrings, which, you know, it doesn't make sense not to train these muscles. They're the ones that are going to help you jump higher. They're the ones that are going to help you run faster. They're just going to make you a better athlete. But when we start to improve just our overall strength around our knee joint, it's also going to keep us healthier too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these big lifts like squats and deadlifts, they're all great lifts, but they're going to help keep us healthy. A big thing that I like to throw in with all my athletes and my clients is single leg work, though. Because single leg work not only tends to put less stress on the actual knee joint itself, but it also helps to maintain balance just around the hip muscle and around the knee. It keeps, or the hip joint, excuse me, it just keeps that muscle balance in check. So a single leg lift like a lunge, you're going to feel it in your butt, you're going to feel it in your hamstrings, you're going to feel it in your quads. So I'm actually working on an entire knee manual right now, and I have an entire section based strictly on single leg lifts, how to approach them efficiently, a nice progression for you to follow. But single leg lifts are, you know, especially for people that might have bad knees and can't squat for whatever reason at the current time, they're a really great, you know, way to train yourself in, I guess, a functional manner, without putting too much torque on your knees. But generally, most people just need more strength. And if they have stronger muscles around their knees, it's going to improve their stability and improve their performance.
Yeah, I got to agree with that. I mean, ever since I started strength training, I don't have the jumper's knee anymore. It might be related. I don't know.
Yeah, I would firmly believe it is. It's something so simple, but, you know, most people just fail to address it in their programming. You know, they think if they have knee pain that they should avoid exercise, mm-hmm. when in fact, you know, generally strengthening the muscles around the knee takes stress off the knee joint, because you can absorb forces better. Your muscles and your tendons are doing the work that they're supposed to do. But that's a whole different story. So, moving up, the hip joint. Since I am the mobility guy, I feel privileged to talk about this topic. But Eric and I actually created an entire DVD called Magnificent Mobility. The entire premise around it was that, you know, if you improve your hip mobility, you're going to become more efficient, you're going to move better, and you're just going to feel better on a day-to-day basis. Especially with the amount of time that people sit on a given day anymore, the hip joint has a tendency to become functionally, or the muscles surrounding the hip joint have a tendency to functionally shorten. They adapt. So just like our muscles adapt to strength training, our hip joint, or the muscles surrounding our hip joint, specifically generally our hip flexors, have a tendency to shorten. Right, they're adapting to what we train them to do every day. Mm-hmm. So with Magnificent Mobility, the goal really is just to get better movement, okay? Start to re-lengthen or improve the extensibility of these tissues surrounding our hips. What I try and explain to people as well is, just like the ankle generally has a direct effect on the knee joint, the hip joint actually has a direct effect over both the knee and the lumbar spine, because our body can look above and or below to improve our mobility. So one thing I always have people try with the hip joint, if you want to see how the hip affects the knee, go ahead and stand up, place your foot firmly on the ground, and then just move from your hip. Try and turn it as far in as you can, try and turn it as far out as you can, and as you'll see, your knee joint is what a lot of people just consider a dumb joint. Okay, it just kind of does what it's what it's supposed to do, what the hip and the ankle tell it to. So in that regard, the hip, if we lack hip mobility, we're going to put excessive stress on our knee joint. On the flip side of that, our hip joint also has control over our lumbar spine. If we're looking at our golfer example that we talked about before, our hip joint or muscles surrounding the hip joint, when they don't have the proper mobility, our lumbar spine is forced to take over. In our Inside Out manual, Bill and I outlined from the thoracic spine down how much rotation should be achieved at each specific lumbar segment, so T1, T2, all the way down to L5. And with the exception of, I believe, L5, S1, that area, the lumbar spine really only has 1 to 2 degrees range of motion into rotation. So really the lumbar spine probably isn't built to rotate, and we look at the functional anatomy of the core, especially the rectus abdominis. These muscles are built kind of as anti-rotators. So when we start looking at the functional anatomy, we look at what the body is built to do, we're starting to see, well, maybe I shouldn't be moving my lumbar spine all that much, you know, but yet now it's one of the cool things. If you're not including rotation in your training, you're not really hip to what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole key is, and this is where this stuff is really influential, you have to get the mobility at the right joints, because a wood chopper done correctly can be a great exercise, but a wood chopper done incorrectly is going to reinforce a bad motor pattern, and it's going to eventually probably cause our people to get injured. So that should give you an idea about the hip joint. You know, if you haven't seen Magnificent Mobility, go out and buy it. There's my shameless plug for that, but it'll definitely help. And the amount of great reviews we've gotten, I mean, we've even had, you know, the strength coaches from Miami Heat have bought it. You know, multiple NBA players have bought it. So it's really something that, you know, when we came out with it, there's nothing inherently special about it. It's simply the fact that it's good, sound exercises, but the coaching is where it's at.
And where can they pick that up again?
MagnificentMobility.com.
Cool.
Or they can just check it out on my website too, RobertsonTrainingSystems.com. But, you know, it's really one of the simplest things you can do. It takes like 5 minutes before your workout, and you're going to have a huge improvement in your performance, especially as your body starts to become more efficient.
That's going to wrap up part one of a two-part interview with Mike Robertson. In part two, we're going to be covering the lumbar spine, the thoracic spine, and also the glenohumeral joint. So don't forget to check that out as well on the FitCastInsider.com. Take care. Well, that should give you a little bit of a taste of what we're going to be offering on the FitCast Insider. Again, if you do have any questions, feel free to drop me an email or check out the FitCastInsider.com. We got some great stuff in the upcoming weeks on there. And also, right off the bat, we have some content with Eric Cressy, Rachel Cosgrove, Tony Gentilcore, of course, Mike Robertson. So don't forget to check that out. It's the FitCastInsider.com. And again, we'll see everyone else next week on the FitCast podcast. So I hope you have a great week. See you next time.